I said that we would go back-to-back in hour one, and we will go back-to-back in hour one. So we just talked some Knicks basketball and MMA with Ariel Helwani. We are joined right now by somebody who covers the NBA and college basketball for CBSSports.com. He was a panelist on our daily show back in the day. Reed Forgrave is my guest. Reed, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I'm great. Those days back in the day, that show was awesome. I absolutely loved every minute of it.
Man, that was fun. I appreciate you saying that, Reed. It was a lot of fun to have you on. I knew I had to bring you back to the jungle, too. Let me start with game one last night. You were in Milwaukee for game one. Before we get to the game itself, and I've been spending a lot of time in Wisconsin lately, but it's been a long time since the Bucks were this good. What was the mood like in that city and in that arena?
It was nuts, man. It was absolutely nuts. First of all, that arena might be the best arena in the NBA. It's certainly in the conversation. Milwaukee absolutely did it right with the arena itself. But also, that space outside the arena is just so cool. Milwaukeeans love their beer. I may or may not have gone outside an hour before the game to meet a friend who's a huge Milwaukee Bucks fan. I may or may not have had a beer with him. I'm not sure. But I did soak in that atmosphere, and those fans deserve it, man. They've hung in there for a really long time with that team, and that whole city is just absolutely stoked about the Bucks.
Reed Forgrave joining us. Now, when you thought about all the possible storylines before that game, were you expecting a battle between Kyle Lowry and Brook Lopez?
Exactly, right? The two titans of these two teams, the MVP candidates. No. I frankly thought that Brook Lopez was going to get played off the court in this series. He wasn't great against the Sixers, but he was has been the best game of his entire career, especially when you consider the stakes last night. Those two shots that he hit at the beginning of the fourth quarter changed the game. The Bucks were, I think, 6 of 35 from 3 through the first three quarters, which it was amazing that they were even hanging in there. Toronto controlled that entire game for 36 minutes. But then when Brook comes out, hits those two threes at the beginning of the fourth, the whole arena, you could just feel the momentum shifting toward the Bucks. It's a heartbreaking way for Toronto to lose, too, because they were good enough to win. Absolutely. They were the better team for the majority of that game. They just couldn't finish.
It was right there for them, especially when you consider the Milwaukee starters. At one point last night, were 2-for-21 from deep, so they were having a lot of trouble. And then, Reed, you've got Giannis, who went 24-14-6 with three blocks. It says something about where he is right now, that he has a night like that, and the reaction's almost like, yeah, that was kind of disappointing. Like, how much of that was about what Toronto was doing on defense, and how do you think Giannis is going to respond?
They swarmed him. I mean, it reminded me a lot of what the Celtics did in game one of that Celtics series. Giannis was not good in game one against the Celtics. They built that wall that cut him off in transition and forced him to pass. He's an incredible passer, but when the shots weren't falling around Giannis like they weren't last night, the Bucks were really, really struggling on offense. And yet, I think the Raptors' defense is another level than the Celtics' defense. But you assume that Giannis is going to be Giannis. He takes a while to figure things out in a seven-game series. He's such a rhythm player. I think those 6 days off since their last game might have hurt. Certainly hurt Milwaukee, and I think especially hurt Giannis. But I fully expect him to be the MVP, the guy that I voted for MVP about a month ago. I expect to see that by game two.
Reed Forgrave joining us. Now, if you look at it like this, the Bucks had the best record in the NBA this year. They've won 5 straight. They've won 9 of their 10 playoff games, and they won last night without playing their best. If any other team was on a roll like this, everybody would be hyping them as the odds-on favorite to win the NBA title. So the Bucks are good. In your mind, are they NBA championship this year good?
I think they could be. I know that's not the hottest take in the world. I'd still pick the Warriors because the Warriors are the Warriors, and they're going to get Kevin Durant back. And he's Steve Kerr calls him the ultimate luxury. It's exactly what he is. When the Warriors struggle, they can just be like, yo, okay, get us a bucket. And he does. And yet, I don't know if the Warriors can stop Giannis. Giannis is an unstoppable force. I do think the Warriors, just if you look at the entirety of their season, whether it's the drama that we probably made a little bit too much of in the media, and yet was still very real, the fact that they're aging, they're not quite the same team. I do think this is the most vulnerable version of the Warriors that we've seen in their 5-year run. I'd still pick them against the field at the beginning of the year and at the beginning of the playoffs. I still think they would be whoever comes out of the East. But I would absolutely give the Bucks, especially playing the way the fact that they won when they played poorly against an elite Toronto defense last night, I'd give the Bucks a fighting chance.
Reed, let me ask you about the lottery, because you were in Chicago for the draft lottery. In fact, you were among the lucky few to be in the sequestered conference room where the lottery actually takes place. First off, they make you surrender your phone before you enter. What's the experience like of going into that room?
Yeah, you feel a little naked without your phone, I can tell you that much.
Right.
It's about 2 hours where you're sequestered. It's tense. Once the you kind of schmooze with executives and the team representatives, like one representative from each of the 14 teams in there, do a little bit of schmoozing, and then it's time for the lottery. Things get quiet, things get tense. They bring out the lottery machine, which kind of looks like a big water cooler. They open it. It's a very like regal ceremony. They open this plastic box with a seal that has 14 ping pong balls that have been weighed and certified by an outside agency. They pop them in there. It whirs around like a popcorn machine. And I mean, you could slice the tension in the room with a knife. You really could. And to see Alvin Gentry's reaction when the four numbers came up Pelicans was absolutely priceless. It was worth the price of admission, because that guy's been through so much crap over the past several months. He's such a not just a respected basketball man in this league, but a respected human being in this league, a guy that is universally liked by players, by media, by fans. It was awesome to see this wave of joy come over him. He said it was the best moment in his 31 years in the NBA. That's how much he believes in Zion Williamson. It might be the moment that, frankly, saves that franchise. That franchise is in a spot with AD asking out and with sort of just the uncertainty of that small market and who knows where they go from here, the uncertainty of the ownership. I think that moment and what we saw from Alvin Gentry in that moment said it all about what Zion Williamson could mean for this franchise.
Reed, for a great my guest. I want to keep you right there for one more moment, because I agree with you. I love Alvin Gentry. This is a huge Alvin Gentry house. I mean, that's supposed to be a really serious buttoned-up process. Has anybody ever reacted like that in that room before? And how did the other team reps react to Gentry's exuberance?
I think what they said was it was the craziest reaction they've ever seen. Like the biggest reaction they'd ever seen before was essentially a fist pump. He jumps up from his seat, spreads his arms wide as if he's receiving the blessing of Zion, shouts something that I can't say on your fine family radio program. And he was just so genuinely thrilled. And, you know, the other 13 guys in the league, they just lost. And it's not like they're finding joy in his joy, but they genuinely were happy for him. He was slapping him five, and I think because he's Alvin Gentry and because the rest of the league looked at what he went through and what that franchise went through this year and felt bad for him, I think there was a genuine feeling of happiness for that man and for that franchise.
All right, so in terms of that franchise, you talked about what that pick might mean to them and to that town. Do they think they can find a way to keep Anthony Davis and pair him with Zion, or is that simply just not possible?
I don't think it's impossible. That whole trade request, the drama of February, March, April in New Orleans felt very out of character for Anthony Davis. I'm not saying it was Clutch Sports that was the kind of using Anthony Davis as their puppet, but I'm not saying it wasn't. It just didn't feel like AD. From college to his early years in the NBA to now, he's always been this team-first guy, the guy that – I talked to John Calipari about him back in college. Loved him. Loved him because he, in the national championship game, he was absolutely off on the offensive end. And he said, I'm just going to play defense. I'm going to let you guys take the load on the offensive end. He was the MVP of that game, despite saying, I want you guys to be the MVP for this game. That's Anthony Davis. So it all felt very out of character. In that way, I don't think it's impossible for Anthony Davis to see the possibilities of, you know, an AD, Zion Williamson, Drew Holiday, big three that I'm not sure if a team will score more than 75 points on them in a game all season. That defense is going to be absolutely ridiculous. I don't think it's likely. I think once the cat is out of the bag a little bit, it's hard to put it back in. It does feel like Anthony Davis has those outside pressures to be in a bigger market, but boy, the excitement level of those three guys being together it would be intriguing to see if he at least gives it a try.
Reed, if you can do this in about a minute, I want to ask you one more thing. You've made the point that essentially this was a three-player draft. So what do you think the Lakers do with the fourth pick?
They had the hardest pick in the draft. I think they trade it ultimately. And I think it was telling when I spoke with Rob Pelinka in that lottery room right after the draft that he said, you know, this could be a great asset or a great young player. He said great asset first. It's a tough spot because if you make a pick there, you need a guy who's ready to win immediately. The window on LeBron is closing. He's got 3 years with the Lakers. Who knows how LeBron-like he is in each of those seasons. So to me, someone like DeAndre Hunter, who is a two-way player, who's been on the big stage before, who has that developed NBA body, a guy who's ready to win, a pick like that makes sense. But if you're taking a guy who's more of a project, that would be an absolutely insane move for a team that has so much pressure to win right now.
He covers the NBA and college basketball for CBSSports.com. And again, a panelist from our daily show back in the day, Reed Forgrave. Great job, Reed. Good to have you back. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
Well done.